Hi everyone, welcome. It's 5 past the hour, so I suggest we get the show on the road for this afternoon. Welcome everyone, welcome GNSO councillors, welcome ICANN board. It's great to have you with us, and welcome to everyone in the room, participants. We've had a notably full room throughout the weekend sessions, which has been great to see. We've had active and thorough participation throughout, so that's what the purpose of these weekend sessions is. It's great to see everyone here. And so let's move on with the session. Steve, I don't know if you want to say anything before we kick things off.
Let me, echo Jonathan's welcome to everybody. From the board's perspective, we welcome these interactions. We view this as coming to hear what you have on your mind and to engage in a substantive and sometimes quite pointed interaction. There's no point in having the time here and not using it usefully. So we'll dispense with courtesies. We'll be courteous, but we'll dispense with the formalities and dive right in. So over to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Steve. We'll go right on with it then. Lars, if you could move things through then. So Steve and I met approximately a week ago, and I understand that he has shared a structure along these lines with the board, and the council's also seen something along these lines. We've split the meeting approximately 50-50. A brief update from the council. I know you've had a policy briefing this morning, so we're not going to drag you through all sorts of detail. And then we really want to get on to what from our point of view is the substance. That's the current challenges and really a set of specific questions that we'd like to pose and discuss with you, and then move on to the second half of the agenda, which Steve will lead us through. So next slide, please, Lars. So from our point of view, we feel we're making good progress, and we'd like to just highlight that very briefly to you and just talk through a couple of points there. As you know, we've spoken about this on two or three previous meetings. We've instituted a culture of dynamic and continuous improvement in the work we're doing. We ran a very successful and first induction and development session at the meeting in Buenos Aires. So what we did for efficiency point of view, we tacked on, if you like, a Friday day-long meeting where we had seated the new council on the Thursday, and then we brought the new council together in a full-day session, which both inducted the new councillors and sort of got everyone on the same page, for want of a less for economic expression. It's the first time we've ever done something like that. Typically, the council's been seated in the past and then, in a sense, gone off into no man's land before meeting again in the first telephonic meeting. So we're able to get round a table, sit together, meet, and set out some form of baseline. We've got an ongoing plan to improve the work that we do on the PDP, and we're very conscious of the need to knit that into and recognize the outputs from the ATRT2, a process which we obviously participated in, and we're grateful for the opportunity to participate in. And, of course, more recently, there's been the work of the Multi-Stakeholder Innovation Panel, which, whilst we've had some concerns with, we feel we will embrace to the best of our ability and knit that into any thinking that we are doing in terms of improvements in the way we work. We have our own standing committee, which sits alongside the council and looks at particular areas of improvement where we can actively improve work we're doing. And we've been actively engaged with the Structural Improvements Committee in tracking and keeping up to date with their thinking on the GNSO review. I trust or hope you'll be aware that we've also been in active dialogue for some months now with the GAC through the GAC GNSO consultation group. So there's a number of initiatives that fit under a broad banner of dynamic and continuous improvement. Next slide, please, Lars. And then just one other slide really highlighting some of the outputs from that induction session. And I think it's important to highlight these points to you, because it shows some of the thinking, and one of the key outputs was to ensure that there is an acknowledgement and respect for the work of the GNSO, and whilst we realise that goes both ways, we have to earn the respect of the community, including the board. We also want to make sure that we highlight and make you aware that this is an important parameter of success for us. And then a few other points, ensuring we demonstrate the ongoing efficiency and effectiveness of the council, this successful working relationship with the GAC. Many of you will be aware that's an output from the original, from the first ATRT, and comes through in much of what we do is a realization that for the multi-stakeholder model to exist successfully, key components must be able to work together and interact not only within the strict structural ways in which it's set up, but to find other and innovative mechanisms by which we can collaborate. It's an ongoing issue for us to ensure we attract new volunteers and continue to build capacity and of course, to engage in continuous substantive activity such that we're actually producing a relevant policy, which is really the core mandate of the council within the GNSO. So next slide, please. And then we're going to highlight three examples of success as we see it from three of us around the table, and then we're done with the presentation. As I say, I know you've had a more thorough and comprehensive policy update today. So I'll hand this over on a per bullet basis to relevant councillors. So Thomas, maybe you could speak very briefly to the first bullet.
Yes, and I'll keep this very brief, but one of the recent examples of successful GNSO policymaking is the IGO-INGO-PDP working group, where the council or the working group dealt with an extremely complex matter, both factual as well as legally, and came up with some 40 policy recommendations in a little bit over a year's time, which ended in a motion that was brought before council and that was unanimously adopted, which we think is a good sign of efficient community collaboration. And I would like to highlight that this motion was not only adopted by the required majority, but that it was unanimously adopted. And even those that didn't like the outcome of what the results of this process were went on record stating that they respected the process, which I think is an important factor in this. So I think we evidence with that we can efficiently work in a foreseeable time span and come up with excellent results. Thank you.
And you'll notice in the bullet then well, thanks Thomas. Thomas chaired that working group that did the work, and in the bullet it specifically highlights and underlines the all GTLDs. And I think it's just important that we remind ourselves that these consensus policy recommendations are applicable and ultimately, should they be not these specific ones, but any consensus recommendation binding on all GTLDs. So, Thiku is Mikey. You'll say a couple of words.
Thanks all for being here. This is my first council session with the board. It's an honor to be here with you. I was the chair of the Thikuiz working group, and this is another thing that the GNSO does really well is sort of the security, stability, resiliency kinds of things. There's been a really long series of PDPs about the inter-registrar transfer policy, and one of the things that came out of that process was the need to get registries and registrars on the same data structure, if you will. And the Thikuiz policy was all about that. And it was great work by a great group. Full consensus at the end came through us, came to you, unanimously approved, and makes a huge change underneath the underpinnings of the DNS. And I'm really proud of it.
Thanks, Mikey. And then finally, the third example, James, if you could speak briefly.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. So the Privacy Proxy Services Accreditation Working Group is just now getting underway a little earlier this year. We have a chair and two vice chairs. We're getting organized to address a number of the issues that have been percolating around this topic for several years. And I think that it's encouraging the way that that group has come together to address some of the early substantial questions that would form the basis of a new accreditation program, and the result of which would be a new kind of contracted party within ICANN potentially, and would presumably address some of the concerns both from the operators of these services as well as the consumers of them, how those practices are implemented in the real world. So we're very excited about the work that's currently getting underway. Some of these issues may have seemed intractable in years past, but I think that the GNSO in particular is making real progress on this front.
Thanks, James. So whilst clearly the substance of this meeting with you is an opportunity to dig under the lid and as you said, Steve, have some proper conversation, we felt it was important to set the scene a little and just highlight some of the perspective and the work that's been done so far and the spirit and approach that's being taken. So if I could have the next slide, please, Lars. So really now we move into talking to you about some of the current challenges and specific questions we'd like to dig into a little bit. I mean, I think there's some, just to set the scene in one final way, I think there's some overarching issues that I'm certainly picking up on, and you will undoubtedly be aware of, some of which we've even talked about before, and certainly the sort of themes are in and around the volume of work and pace of change. There's no doubt that that's something that's concerning all of us, and it's a theme that comes through. There's certainly a concern over a perception of whether, however you express it, whether it's in a sense top down, whether it's insufficient bottom up, whether we're taking the time to brew things properly through the multi-stakeholder processes, and really some sort of guarantee of ongoing preservation of the bottom up consensus based multi-stakeholder system, which we hold, you know, so close to all of our hearts. So that's really, those are some overarching sort of themes that seem to have been percolating through the weekend sessions. But thinking about some very specific questions and issues that we wanted to pick up with you, I mean, certainly one of the first is we received, as you'll be aware, at the beginning of the weekend, a letter from the new GTLD program committee in and around the work of the INGO, PDP. And Thomas, maybe you want to pick up on that and kick off with that.
Yes, and it's sort of seamlessly linking to what I said earlier, i.e. that the community came up with recommendations that were adopted unanimously by the council, and that with this letter we now see at least the danger of the board not abiding by or not adopting the policy recommendations that we made. And we think that there is an issue with this, and that is twofold. One of which is that I think there might be frustration with the community putting an awful lot of work into this PDP. We had weekly 2-hour calls. So we worked very hard to make the aggressive timelines to be ready at the point in time when the new GTLDs are actually being launched, so that we can far-reaching protections can be granted, and we feel that volunteers looking at this might come to the conclusion that it's a moot effort to put time and resources into such PDP work when ultimately the results are not being adopted. The second area is that, with the latest announcement of the U.S. government, I think we need to be very careful to actually have the organization work in a bottom-up, multi-stakeholder, consensus-driven fashion. And we do see the danger that when the community comes up with a consensus position and the board doesn't fully digest that, that the U.S. government, when looking at how ICANN operates, actually will look at those aspects as well. And we see certainly that the board is under pressure with with GAC advice that is in place for this particular subject. So we do see that. But at the same time, we do think that it is inevitable for us to enter into a consultative process or to a dialogue where we just don't get a letter that sort of informs us that that our advice might be, or our policy recommendations might be rejected without double-checking with us what the implications are for what we did, whether the subjects that you are deliberating on potentially have been dealt with in the course of the working group. So I think there is a lack of potentially appreciation for the work of the volunteers in this.
So, Shireen, how badly did you screw this up?
So let me respond to that by saying some general points, and then Chris will specifically talk about the IGO, NGO protection, where we are on this, and propose a way forward. First of all, let me start by saying that the NGPC does recognize that the GNSO has provided consensus recommendation to the ICANN board on this issue. And with that come certain obligations under the ICANN bylaws for us to provide a comprehensive response to the GNSO on a timely manner, and this we will do. Now, in working towards a comprehensive response, let me highlight kind of three things just to bear in mind. The first thing is that there are specific GNSO policy recommendations in relation to the IGO-NGO protection that differ from the proposal to implement the GAC advice. The second point is the temporary protections currently in place for the IGOs run contrary to the GNSO recommendation that would prohibit reservation for IGO acronyms at the second level. And the third thing is that the NGPC is aware of the GNSO preliminary issue report addressing access by IGOs and NGOs to the UDRP and the URS. So before we get in detail, I just want to say that we fully respect and fully appreciate the work done by the GNSO and the PDP process. We appreciate the effort and the time spent in developing a recommendation to the board. We know there's a process. We are committed to the bottom-up approach, and we will follow the process. So you have our absolute commitment to doing so. Now, it may not appear so by the letter we sent you, but as you realize, nothing is set in concrete. We are just trying to formulate our response to you by trying to find some cohesive response. So I'll pass on to Chris, who will then talk about this and propose the way forward. Chris?
Thank you, Shireen. Hi, everyone. I just want to echo what Shireen said about the policy development process and the respect for that. I mean, as if not all of you, most of you know, I come from the CCTLD world where the policy development is held in very high regard, and I don't think there's any difference with the GTLD policy. But I want to talk about some practicalities and explain to you why we're in the situation that we're in, so that you're clear, A, what the current situation is, and B, that we're not in danger of breaching the process. So it'll take me a few minutes. I hope you'll bear with me, but where we sit right now is as follows. We have a piece of GAC advice that, in paraphrase, basically says reserve all acronyms of the IGOs. We have come back to the GAC and said that is troublesome and difficult to implement, but we haven't rejected it. We have temporarily reserved the acronyms as well as the names, and we've been working with the IGOs to find an acceptable way that would enable us to say to the GAC, we accept your advice, this is how we are going to implement it. So that's what we've been working on with the IGOs. At the same time, you've been running your policy development process. And again, I know this is very shorthand, but in effect, your policy development, the result of your policy development process is that the acronym should be placed in the TMCH for 90 days. And you have also acknowledged, or you've also said, that there is some work that needs to be done on mechanisms so that the IGOs have some way of dealing with disputes, because currently they don't. And you've launched or you are about to launch another policy development process on the URS and the UDRP. Okay. So where we sit right now is that we have a conflict between the GAC advice, which is to put the to reserve the acronyms, and your advice, or your policy recommendation rather, which is in respect to the TMCH. And leaving everything else aside, if we just looked purely at process and nothing else, we have only got two alternatives. One is that we accept the GAC advice, reject your advice, there's a process, reject your advice. That's one. And that effectively means that the names will be reserved. The other alternative is to accept your policy recommendation, to reject the GAC advice, which means that there is a bylaw process that is triggered, which by our estimation with the GAC, which by our estimations with the best will in the world will take at least 6 months, and that and the names will remain reserved during that 6 month period while we go through that process for rejecting their advice. Now, ultimately, it may be that we actually have to do one of those two things. But for now, we're trying to do neither of those two things. However, having said that, let me be very clear. The board has not yet formally considered your policy recommendations. Okay. The purpose of sending you the letter was to say to you, look, this is where we've got to in our discussions with the IGOs. It seems to us that if we do the following things in the interim, we may be able to get somewhere. And those things are to take your TMCH advice and remove the 90-day thing and just say stick them in the TMCH so that they get notified if someone registers one of their acronyms. Secondly, that is irrespective of whether we follow your advice, the 90 days, or we take the 90 days out, it's useless to the IGOs unless they have some mechanisms by which they can actually do something if somebody does register their acronym. So whilst you're working on that, which you've acknowledged by saying you're going to do a PDP, whilst you're working on that, we will put in place some interim measures that will enable the IGOs to have access to the URS and some kind of a DRP. And in the draft document, it says very clearly that that stuff is interim and it will be dependent, you know, the end is dependent on what happens with the GNSO policy development process. Now, that is not set, that hasn't been agreed. That is a suggestion that, in fact, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to go to a small meeting with the IGOs and GAC chair to talk about. And what we thought we would do is to send you a note, which I accept could probably have been better expressed, to say, look, this is what's on the table. Now, if you want to, just sticking with the practicalities, and I've nearly finished, I would have thought that if you are looking at DRP and URS as possible mechanisms, it would be quite useful for you to have the staff going through the processes of figuring out the legalities of that for our interim stuff, because that will help you in trying to work out what you can and can't do in respect to your policy development process. And the final point is, if we do this interim measure, there is, I would argue, a significant benefit for the GTLD community or the GNSO community, because what it means is that the acronyms are freed up. They are no longer reserved. They are freed up. And they are subject to the mechanisms that we put in place. So that's the practicalities of it. Just to end by saying once again, all of which is fine and dandy as long as we continue to respect the policy process, and we certainly do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris, because I think that's given a good overview of your perspective. I just want to come back to Thomas with really a quest from you, or a question for you. How would you like to handle the process going forward? Because as I see it, we've got a board committee that has come up with a potential solution of which they have talked to the IGOs or are talking to the IGOs about that. Now, how would you see, what's the best way for you to engage? Is really, how would you like to engage? I think that's what I'd like to hear.
I guess a way forward would be to stay in contact and discuss and not be informed that certain things will be done in certain ways, because I think that is This discussion is always a good starting point to avoid duplication of efforts, because I think the thoughts that the NGPC might have may have in part or in total already have been discussed during the PDP working group. So I think that we have knowledge that you should try to tap on, and that's not just me, but that's the whole group, and also to protect the integrity of the process and avoid frustration with the community. So I think, as I said, we do acknowledge that you have GAC advice that you need to deal with, but at the same time, I think we should avoid the impression, jointly avoid the impression for the outside community, that whatever we do, we're just being told that something else is being done. And I think that that there are procedural ways to deal with this, so we have the option of actually come up with supplemental or amended recommendations. I can't remember the exact terminology, but there is a process for this, which I think we should use in order to bridge the gap between what is currently on the table from the GNSO and what you have to deal with from the side of the GAC.
You would want us to keep the GAC equally informed, I would imagine.
I'm all for transparency with this. I think it's yeah. You know, if you take multi-stakeholder in the true sense of the word, they are part of this ecosystem.
Sure.
So I'm all for being transparent with this. I can say also that the IGOs are now being offered something that they have bluntly rejected during the PDP work. So I think this is something that we should sit together over, or have a telephone conference, or deploy other mechanisms of communication in order to see how we best resolve this, and yet not neglect or ignore what the community came up with. And again, these were not recommendations that have just passed the required majority level, but that has been unanimous. And again, those, I think it was Klaus who explicitly went on record. He said, well, we don't like the outcome of this PDP, but we respect the process. And I think that we shouldn't turn that clear message around by having this top-down type approach, which I think you are not intending to take. But I think that we need to be very careful with this, particularly since we're now under a new type of scrutiny given the NTI discussions.
You guys want to add anything to this? Chris.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say two things. One, again, it isn't top-down. It isn't intended to be top-down, and I can't really stress that enough. But I did want to pick up on what Thomas said about there is a process for this going forwards, and that it's a little heavyweight, but it exists. And so it would what we don't want to do is to trigger that process until we know we have a reason to trigger that process. And the only way we're going to know we have a reason to trigger that process is if we have got an indication from the IGOs that they will go for something, and then we can trigger the process. So, and there's a time frame on that. I think, Jonathan, it's got to be, there is a fixed time, but best efforts, but within a reasonable period of time. So I think that that's exactly what we should be doing. But if we can't reach any sort of agreement with them, then it's a different response rather than that response.
I've got a couple of questions coming up from the council, but let me go to David and then Brett.
Yeah. First, I want to say that the council very much appreciates that you have been put in a difficult position, and we are, working. Some of us are working quite hard at the moment to ensure that in the future the GAC and the GNSO can have their arguments before it reaches council. Expecting us to always agree will be too much, but at least to have the arguments well and truly out before they hit council the board would be, I appreciate, a great improvement. But I think ignoring the details of the procedure, which I realise is not very helpful to the board, who are very focused on the exact procedure, what we really, I think, a lot of us are thinking is we understand there has to be we have to craft a compromise. We understand the board very much wants a compromise here. We understand the board is trying hard to create one. We understand the board position there, but really we very much welcome board efforts to facilitate a compromise, but we don't want the board to craft one. We want if there is a compromise to be crafted, the GNSO should be right in there as the people who created the PIOP policy, created the statement. We need to be very much involved in that. And when I stress this is, this was consensus GNSO policy. It was fully agreed to by the whole council. We can't be more, there's not a lot of wiggle room on our point. This was consensus policy. We were very, very clear on it. And we rejected quite a lot of non-consensus policy at the same time. So we understand there's a difficult position. Please involve us ongoing in the exact details of what the solution.
So thank you. First of all, there's no mistake in your message. And so that's quite clear. I don't want to add any more to what's been said already, but I think there is perhaps at least one clear part of what we hear, that there could be better communication on our part. And I empathize very much with your notion, David, that and James, sorry, not Thomas, you said basically the same thing, that we should be involved in any of this discussion. We always do not want to be in the position of trying to craft our own policy decision out of something. And so, and yet we're stuck in this bind where we're getting contrary advice from sources that feel very strongly that they've gone through their processes and have spoken, and so that's the end of it from that perspective. It's probably best, I think the messages are clear and best pursued in another setting, and probably best use of the time to move on to the next issue.
I'll be brief. I just had one follow-up on this, and it goes back to Chris's point about process. Brett Fawcett, for the record, by the way, representing the registry constituency. As I understand the process, and going back to the bylaws, any PDP recommendation approved by a GNSO supermajority vote, and this one was unanimous, shall be adopted by the board. It's not discretionary, unless two-thirds of the board votes that it's not in the best interest of the ICANN community or ICANN. So I don't know that the board has discretion to do anything with the GNSO's recommendation other than adopt it, unless you've had a vote by a two-thirds majority that you think it's not in the best interest of ICANN.
So we haven't had that vote. Given forceful advice from the GAC, we're not going to take that vote until we've satisfied ourselves that we understand what the issues are and attempted to bring things into as much of a compromise or a coordinated position as possible. We do not like at all to say no to a policy that's been developed up through the GAC, whether it's unanimous or bare majority or whatever. But as you read, the mechanism exists for us to be able to do that. It would be a very uncomfortable and carefully taken decision if we did that. I will tell you that, and I'm sure you recognize the dynamics, that if we got to the point where we felt that we had to say no, we would do so with a pretty strong majority. I don't think there'd be any problem reaching the two-thirds. I don't think it would be a close vote. If it was a close vote, we would know that we weren't going to do that. But typically, we'll have a rather full discussion and dig into it. So we'll be quite deliberate about it.
Yeah. I just wanted to pick up on, I agree with what Steve said, but Jonathan or Thomas, there is a way of us coming back to you and saying, can we have a supplementary
look at it again, isn't there?
I think you're referring to, I mean, it sounds like Brett might even have the bylaws in front of him, but it's in the event that you reject it, there's a kind of...
All right,
of
so we have to go through the 66% rejection
there
first.
There would be a mechanism of then a further revisiting of the issue.
So as I said earlier on, it's a sledgehammer.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be nice to be able to not have to use the sledgehammer, but if we did have to use the sledgehammer, we should only be using it because we've all agreed that's what we have to do. When I say we all, I mean we all have agreed that that's what we have to do. Yeah.
So I'm conscious that we've got a few other questions and issues that we wanted to deal with, but I'm seeing a couple of hands come up from James and Osvaldo, so would you like to take more time on this?
I think mine is fairly quick because I'm going to ask a newbie question here, which is when the policy, I think, has elements that affect all TLDs, including incumbent TLDs, why is this specifically the new GTLD program committee on point here versus the full board? I guess I'm not clear on that particular point.
It's because, well, sorry, it isn't. The discussions with the IGOs have up until now been in the NGPC because they arose from new GTLD discussions, right? Your policy advice would come to the full board because that's where it belongs. And that is an added extra nuance that we are going to have to try and deal with, and I'm not entirely sure how we'll get through that, but we'll figure it out.
Okay. Osvaldo?
Yes, Osvaldo Novoa. Just a question, two questions, strictly. One is, there is a deadline for when the board is going to consider our policy decision, because according to the bylaws, it says the board will meet to discuss the GNSO Council recommendation as soon as feasible after receipt of the board report from the staff manager.
As soon as feasible is the key phrase in that bylaw.
But it does say not later than the second meeting after.
Well, then that answers that question. preferably not later, isn't it? Preferably not later.
Go ahead. My question, the first question was if you have a schedule, when are you going to consider this?
That's So I apologize. I don't have that specific in my mind, but as a general statement, we are putting a lot of effort into getting stronger and stronger control of the workflow that comes to the board, and trying not to lose track of things so that questions like you're asking don't get asked very often because we stay within the schedules that we've set up. So I apologize; I don't have a specific answer, but I do put a lot of weight on that class of issue, and it's a slow incremental process with everything else going on. But there's a lot of effort going on to tracking and keep and watching the clock on things and making sure that the process goes forward. There's a hand up down there. That must be Aubrey.
Thank you. And thank you for including me after you had almost sort of shut the list. I guess I have two issues on this. One is during the process, and let's call it clarification discussions that one might have with IGOs, GAC, and such, while trying to figure out whether you're going to use your two-thirds sledgehammer, it would strike me that since the IGOs did participate in this process, that having that discussion without some of the leaders of the working group, without the chair of the working group and others participating in that conversation, allows for a process where you get arguments and roundabout arguments that may or may not fit the facts of what happened during the working group. So the fact that you are having I don't have a problem with there being negotiations, as it were, prior to you taking the vote within the time limits. But to have those with only some of the parties and not representative of all the parties seem problematic. And I guess the other thing I want to say is that If it gets to the point that you feel you need to use your two-thirds sledgehammer, then put yourself on the books as doing that. And then let's have the discussions that follow that. The sort of let's go around and let's be gentle and let's not really put ourselves on the table as saying, no, we think there is a public interest. And it was very specific. Not that it's kind of a problem with the GAC and the IGOs, but if you think there's a public interest that the working group missed, then you should use your sledgehammer and you should take us to the next step of negotiating that. So those are two points that I wanted to put into the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So we have, unsurprisingly, we're running a clock down here, and when I look at my list of potential questions, there are at least three areas we were hoping to cover in addition to this. I hope, probably naively, that two of them could be covered relatively quickly. One might make more time. So I think I'll give you a heads up as to what those three different areas are. One of them is in and around at least a perceived backlog in dealing with I think ESSAC reports. I hope I'm getting that right, and responding to SSR type issues. So that's something that Mikey wanted to raise, and we can come to that. It may be that there's almost a yes-no answer there, or a relatively short answer. The other is there's been a little bit of buzz generated in and around the council about whether or not there is some mechanism by which board appraisals have a community component to them, and that's something that John's been keen to raise. I'm looking around where I see John. Do I see John Berard? Yeah, okay, sorry, John, you're not at the table. And then finally, there's some issues in and around the success or not, and particular issues in and around the new GTLD program. Now, I would highlight to you that we've had a comprehensive meeting with staff on this morning, but some councillors felt quite strongly that elements of this should be, if for want of a better description, escalated to or discussed with the board. So those are the three things. I suggest to you we deal rather more quickly with the board appraisal component and the ESSAC, and then come on to the new GTLD. So John, maybe you want to go ahead.
Good afternoon. John Berard, councillor from the business constituency. Is this on? Can I be heard? I hear myself. Yeah, it's terrific. The council list took up the cause of crowdsourcing a few weeks ago when the multi-stakeholder innovation panel brought crowdsourcing to the fore. And it struck us as an interesting idea, especially in conjunction with the way in which the community began to or had come to believe that the strategy panels and the president's panels, as we have previously discussed with Fadi, had come to pass from a let's make it happen and see and go from there, that why not apply the concept of crowdsourcing to a review of the performance of the CEO and the board. So we know that Fadi is coming up on his two-year anniversary. We know that there are performance reviews for both executives and for board members. And so the thinking at the council was, could we ask the board, which conducts the reviews or has them conducted, like a colonoscopy, I guess, to accommodate, to create an opportunity for the community to participate in the performance reviews of the CEO and the board. So that's the question on the table. How can we make it happen? And if we can play a role, we would be more than happy to help you do that.
I've had a colonoscopy. The board reviews are more painful. Bruce?
Thank you, Steve. And thank you for the suggestion, John. Certainly, we've been using 360 degrees as a concept for reviews of board members. We have used that tool for reviews of previous CEOs in the past. And certainly, I have spoken to Fadi today, and he's amenable to using a 360 degree style process for his evaluation as well. The exact mechanism is yet to be determined, but just want to say we're open to suggestions that you might have for how to engage the community in such a process.
Great, thank you. Anybody else want to contribute, or I'll take my seat. Thank you.
Thanks, John. So I suggest we move rapidly on then to this point, Mikey, about SSR, and I'll leave you to introduce.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's Mikey O'Connor from the ISP constituency again. This is sort of a general point. And, you know, I have sort of two themes that I beat the drum on all the time. One is working groups, and the other is SSR. And one of the things that's emerged on this new GNSO SSR list that we just started, by which, and by the way, I invite anybody who's into SSR to join it, is that there's this sort of consistent recommendation through a whole bunch of recent SSAC reports that says, you know, in the case of the DDoS using DNS infrastructure report, SAC 55 or 65, I think, and others, that sort of the first recommendation is ICANN should lead a global awareness campaign, mostly with network operators and administrators, about this issue. And there are enough of those now that it seems like there's an opportunity to sort of take all that global awareness momentum and squish it together into one snowball. Because, you know, we've got the names collision issue, we've got the root key rollover one. There are a whole bunch of them that are kind of all there that we could use this as sort of a springboard to maybe add to Sally Costerton's portfolio about global awareness, where there's this terrific advice coming out of the SSAC and the technical community that we could use to do outreach around. And so I just wanted to sort of put that in front of you on the radar. I didn't exactly know, you know, they're not necessarily GNSO issues. They're really partly GNSO issues, but lots of other pieces of the puzzle too. So that was my question for you.
Fadi? Mikey is making the case that SSAC is giving us a whole lot of pointed advice that could be aggregated together into a campaign. The thing that strikes me hardest about this is that we're talking about resources and people. Would you like to comment on this?
We'll definitely take it into consideration. I think it's a good idea. And we already do quite a bit of security training. We've had a show in Africa that's gone around 8 cities. We just re-upped it. So there's quite a bit going on. We could maybe look at adding some of the latest input from SSAC into that.
Go ahead.
Really brief reply. I haven't had a lot of direct experience with those outreach efforts, except in the case of the name collision issue. And I'm trying very hard today with jet lag not to be grouchy, Mikey, but the outreach effort around name collisions is pretty underwhelming. You know, it's sort of like, well, we count the number of tweets. We got X tweets. We've, you know, been placed in 90 journals. It's kind of, but wait, we have, I don't know, millions of network operators that need to know about this stuff. Can't we up our game a little bit? That's, sorry to be slightly grouchy, Mikey.
Thank you, Steve. Actually, Mikey, this morning in the board workshop, this particular issue came up. And what you're really talking about is the distribution and the proliferation of the advisories themselves, not taking them and packaging and making a training plan or some program on it, but actually getting the piece of paper into the hands of an operator who may be putting it on the wall or something like that. I think that's what you're after, right?
Yes and yes.
Okay, well, the thing is that there are mechanisms, and in the discussion we were having this morning about engagement group that came up as far as distribution mechanisms that already exist, and there may be ways of taking advantage of existing organizations to do that. For example, you could use the offices of the regional registries. You could use the at-large structures, because those are all local type guys. So there are a number of ways that are there that could be explored to do that distribution and do that proliferation. So I think that we need to take time and take a look at those kinds of things and see what we can do with it.
This is Izumi from JPNIC and also from ISPCP, and I just want to comment on Ray's comments that you've just raised, and this is exactly what we do. We're trying to document what was released into Japanese and then discussing it within our ISP community so that they know what exactly it means. And in the APRICOT conference, which was held in February, that's a technical conference for the network operators within the Asia-Pacific region. We did like a lightning talk explaining this issue. So if each of these different stakeholders involved in the ICANN can help spread the words, that would be maybe helpful in raising awareness. And if there is a common material to do this kind of thing in presentation format, that might be something that's helpful as something additional. Just my thought and sharing my experience.
Thanks. I've got Mike Silber next in the queue.
Thanks. I think, while Mikey's point is well taken, I also think there's no point in behaving like a bunch of chicken littles. I think most ISPs are aware of the issue. Those who aren't obviously haven't been involved in the DNS very much, given that this is not a new issue. It's been around for a number of years since we started introducing new TLDs, since we started looking at IDNs and others. So it's not a new issue. Let's not get panicked about it. Obviously, we need to get the information out there. We are, but just as an example, I happen to be involved in the local South African ISP Association, 180 ISPs across the country, been getting the information out there, and the feedback I've got is, thanks, that's useful, but nothing that we didn't know already. So I also don't think that we need to call panic on this particular issue, but can we improve outreach? Can we do more? Absolutely. And I think the suggestions need to be taken on board and taken forward.
Thanks, Mike. I've got Kuwe and then Marilyn, the microphone.
Yeah, I'd just like to, just continue like Ray and also Izumi is raising about. Actually, for all the IRR, every year we have two meetings. In every two meetings, before that, we have a workshop. In the workshop, we actually have all kind of security or, technical issue to discuss and also do the education. And as Izumi mentioned about, APNIC, meeting just on February in the Kuala Lumpur. Actually, we also, actually ICANN is a participant. I think this is maybe the first time in the Asia-Pacific regions that ICANN is a participant with the IR, APNIC, work together, and hopefully this, this kind of event can grow not only for the ISP or the, number community. Hopefully for, the domain name industry, the registry or registrar or restaurant, whatever, and you are more than welcome to participate in the, the regional APNIC or APRICOT meeting and come to, join us. So we can share the when we're talking about the cost, that is already existing mechanisms. So, ICANN can put a little bit, not create a new event because if we look at the agenda every year, right, we are very full by the agenda. And so it's much better it's a join with the existing events. And then we can share the experience. We can also, much easier to, put our, agenda in our personal. So I think this is one of the suggestions. Actually, if I remember, actually, the board, we have a retreat meeting, we're talking about this one, and we all agree upon. So I think this is something hopefully all the, GNSO people can join us in to participate those of the existing events. Thanks.
Thanks, Kuwei. Let's hear from Marilyn, and I suggest we draw a line under this topic.
I was thinking about introducing myself as I was introduced on Saturday on the call as Zerillion Cade. And I wanted to do that because I want to comment on something that I've been observing in the few minutes I've been in here as a terrific gap in understanding between what I heard people say and what the responses were that I heard. And obviously on Saturday, I said my name was Marilyn Cade, but it was heard as Zerillion Cade. I've decided to adopt Zerillion, so in the future I'll be referred to as Zerillion. But I'm giving it as an example of what I'm concerned about. This morning in a meeting between the CSG constituencies and two of the board members, we gave illustrations about the challenges we face in taking the complex activities at ICANN and translating them into information that is digestible by a whole new group of people who have to get on board and adapt to the rapid changes that are going on. And I've heard people in the time I've been in the room, Mikey and others, explaining that we need different kinds of materials and we need different approaches to communication. And the answers I've heard so far from the board members who've responded is that there are a number of places where you guys can come and get on board. And I really appreciate what is going on in all of the technical spaces. When I first became involved in the internet, I got great coaching from senior technical people at AT&T so that I could actually be on the NANOG list and not get flamed as much as I may have deserved to be flamed. But my comment to you guys is, from what I've heard from the board members so far, I'm not sure you're hearing the problem that we're presenting to you.
Bastian?
Thank you, Marilyn. I just would like to extend a little bit more. It's and sorry for my fellow colleagues over the board, but we have to listen to the community. If they think that they don't get what they want, what they need to do their work, then we need not to say, yes, it's already done, but maybe we need to hear them and to see how we can improve our organization to answer the need of the community. That's a bottom-up process, and that's a multi-stakeholder system. Thank you.
Next.
So we can go next in the agenda. Yeah, so I think, I mean, I'm just conscious that this agenda, I've checked with Steve that he's comfortable with that, is very much the sort of council-driven agenda. There's a series of, and yet we still have the opportunity to hear from the board some update or other issues. So we have to balance this, but there are a series of questions and issues being raised in and around the new GTLDs that councillors felt strongly should be potentially raised in this forum. I'm not going to do any more preamble, but hit those bullets. So Thomas, you first on my list, which is name collisions, GTLDs.
Yes, I guess the main theme is that as you know, the new GTLD program will be evaluated, so we will be tested whether there is actually an improvement of consumer choice and competition. And there are three areas which we have identified, and I'm going to speak to the first of them, where we see that this goal is potentially jeopardized. And I'm going to speak to the issue of name collisions, and while this is something that affects all new GTLDs, I guess it's of particular concern for geographic TLDs that sort of live from having local content, unique content that's specific to the environment that they're for. And what we saw is that many cities, for example, can't allow the registrants use names that are very relevant to the local community, i.e. names of authorities, names of cultural goods, names of local football clubs. And there's one TLD, for example, that has a marketing campaign and awareness campaign, and 50 of the founders and sponsors that actually helped to evangelize that there is a local namespace can't use their own name, such as the local bank or even public authorities. And we think that we should reconsider the way name collisions are currently being dealt with, because I would assume that most, if not all, of those names that have ended up on the reservation list are there because users anticipate that this new extension is going to come and they test whether it's live already. But we do think that there might not be actual risks behind that. And if only the beneficiaries of those names, i.e. the authorities themselves, the cultural goods themselves, or the sports clubs themselves, or the banks themselves can use those names, I guess the risk might be close to zero.
So I think the point is made. I'm not sure there is any response. It's on the record. You make the point, and it's understood, I think, unless there's a specific example. But you've given a pretty close generic description, Thomas. So I think unless anyone specifically wants to respond, you've highlighted the point.
I can add a little bit. I understand the point that you're making. I haven't participated heavily, but I've watched the dialogue back and forth on the collisions. There's this gray area. There's certain names for which it's just obvious that you don't want to allocate them at all, corp and home. Down in the range where there's a little bit of traffic but not a terrible amount, it raises the question of exactly what all that means, and you're suggesting that one explanation is that they're simply testing against this ahead of time, and so that it's not meaningful in terms of that. There is a bias, very reasonable bias, built into the evaluation process, the judgment process, on the conservative side, because it's always possible to loosen it up later. It's never possible to tighten it up later. And so there's a preference to proceed very cautiously. And I think that it's perfectly reasonable to ask to visit these questions more pointedly and more decisively than has been, although quite a lot of work has been put in. I don't want to diminish that at all. So I don't know where all that winds up, but I can appreciate that there'd be a degree of discomfort on both sides about proceeding with this, about whether to hold back or whether to proceed. And Internet's a very big, complicated system, and it's not possible to understand everything that's going on, so that leads to a certain amount of uncertainty, and hence this caution that we're encountering. Anybody want to add to that? No. Thank you.
So let's move on to James then on the point on the data retention in and around the RA.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I wasn't sure if we were going to continue with this one, but we did have a fairly lengthy discussion earlier today. What's that?
If you're happy it's covered elsewhere, then I'm happy to move. I mean, want to move through things quickly. So if you...
Yeah, I mean, if the agenda and the time frame is at risk here, then we can move through this. I think that we've covered this fairly extensively with Cyrus and his team earlier today, and I think we've got some outstanding items that we need to work on later this week. So I think we're okay on that.
Great. That's useful to me, because some of these things could be argued that they belong in that forum, but I know there was a strong feeling on the part of some that they needed to be raised with the board. Ching, I have you on universal acceptance. Is that something you'd still like to talk to?
I'll probably pass, and I know that, understand that in this upcoming week we have a specific session.
Fine.
For this. It's ongoing.
Good.
So I'll pass.
Thanks. Brian, on new GTLD objections.
Brian Winterfeld, the IPC. I just wanted to raise very briefly, I know we're very behind in the schedule, that obviously there were some issues around the objection procedures. In particular, there were community and limited public interest ones that had on-cap fees and very long delays that were very difficult and burdensome on concerned parties. In addition, with the string confusion objections, there were some inconsistent or perceived inconsistent decisions that require some attention as well, potentially, before we go to the next round.
Well, on the inconsistent determinations of the panel, we have asked staff to put a paper out for us to consider alternatives. We've put that paper out to public comments, and we have not finished with the public comments and the reply period, and we will wait for staff to compile the analysis and present it to us, I think, at our next new GTLD committee meeting. I think it's going to be in Los Angeles in April.
Thank you. Is there more?
No, I think we're done, so we can move on to your part of the agenda.
Thank you. As you see on the agenda, there's three bullet points under ICANN board, board update, board advisory committees, and the board view on critical globalization and governance issues. I want to cover them in reverse order. I'm not sure what will be left of board update by the time we do the other two. When this agenda was originally put together, it was we almost need a shorthand for before announcement versus after announcement. But the announcement from U.S. Department of Commerce, NTIA, that they intend to seek the end of the IANA contract and look for how to globalize and have satisfactory mechanisms for replacing NTIA's role in the IANA process has really initiated a very vigorous effort, which is, I mean, I'm not saying anything anybody doesn't know full well, an awful lot of dialogue associated with that. It brings into pretty sharp relief that there are, in effect, three globalization and governance streams, if you will. One is the broad transformation of ICANN itself, and Larry Strickling arrives immediately, exactly on time here to hear all of this. Then we'll wait for him to leave, right? So one broad stream is the globalization of ICANN, which has been underway for a while, and then this new stream, if you will, is the transformation or the evolution, perhaps, of the IANA process and what changes, if any, are needed in the after this announcement. And that has become, of course, a pretty vigorous issue. There is no firm and fast clock on this, but the natural one is related to the expiration of the existing IANA contract. As a matter of form, I'll say that that contract is a three-year contract that ends September 30th, 2015, that is essentially 18 months from now. However, that contract has options for extensions. It has two options for extensions of 2 years apiece, so that it could be running as long as 7 years. And speaking as just on my own as an, somebody who once worked for the U.S. government and had something to do with money and contracts and so forth, there's plenty of flexibility to do things other than those particular marker points. But if one takes the September 30th, 2015 next year as a kind of natural target, then there's a bunch of things that have to happen pretty vigorously between now and then. You know, we don't have 18 months to begin thinking about things. We have less than 18 months to basically get things settled so that if that contract is going to expire and transitions are going to take place, all of the what happens after that is well understood, and if any mechanisms have to be put in place, they're up and running and tested and so forth. So that's dominating a lot of activity. And then as another quite substantial activity is the issues of internet governance writ large, and the Brazil meeting next month and the OneNet initiative are key elements of that. All of that is supposed to be focused on things that are not specific about ICANN and the small set of issues that ICANN is focused on and is responsible for. But that's a lot of activity. And the announcement last Friday, I guess a week ago, really changed the tenor of everything, changed the focus. So those activities are not only dominating a lot of the board's attention, but they're dominating a lot of everyone's attention. I'm sure the same is true here. We very, very much want to hear I'll finish that sentence, but I'll come back and say it a bit differently. We want to hear everyone's views on the IANA evolution process. But let me restate it. It isn't that we want you to tell us. We want people to be talking about it. We want people to be telling each other about it. It's not just an input into a closed decision process, but there needs to emerge a broad understanding of what the issues are, and I have to say what the issues aren't. I'm watching a lot of traffic that suggests that this is being used as an opportunity either to add on a whole lot of other things or is kind of evidence that people are imagining a lot of things that just aren't the case about how the IANA function works and what it does and what it doesn't do. That's really a big change. And meanwhile, not incidentally, we've got all of our usual work to do, the GTLD program and support for all the different parts of the organization and each of the supporting organizations and advisory committees. I've been spending my time, as I indicated a little bit earlier, on looking at some of the machinery and processes and trying to get them sorted out to be a bit more efficient and a bit more effective. It's low-key work in a way, not deliberately not trying to make a big splash about things, but trying to, as quietly as possible, get things to work more and more smoothly. We've made several accomplishments, which I'm very pleased about, and there'll be more to come. And none of them will be headline making. At least I hope they won't. It's slightly awkward that Fadi has left the room because, with respect to the board advisory committees, they were started with a certain mindset, and that the context for those has really changed as a consequence of the recent activities. And so we're in the process of actually suspending or phasing down those advisory committees. Anybody?
Steve Fuddy did update us a little on that. We met with Fuddy yesterday, and our discussion with him was post the formulation of this agenda, and he did update us about some of the changes and with the advisory committees.
How excellent. That's great. And I don't remember whether he told us or me that he had done that, but anyway, that's great. And I'm sure he was more eloquent about all of that than I have been and provided greater context. So rolling back to the first bullet, what elements of board update are left for us to communicate that haven't been included in what I've said before? And let me look around to see what my colleagues want to add. Bruce?
Really, just less a board update, but more a question, actually. One of the things that we're being asked to do, and it came out in the ATRT2 report, as well as increasing the sort of globalisation Is that an active discussion within the GNSO at the moment in terms of sort of reviewing the participation that you get in working groups and means to widen the participation? And has there been any thought to how you get topics on the agenda that might be of more interest to parts of the developing world? You know, a lot of when I look at the agenda of the GNSO over the last few years, it's very much dealing with what I'd call first world problems. Has there been any thought of a process to try and get different issues that might be of interest to other parts of the world into policy development processes?
Anyone want to comment or provide any input on that? Mikey?
I'm sticking my hand up just to see if Klaus is in the room. Is Klaus Scholl here? Okay, I defer to Klaus.
Be absolutely honest, I didn't pay attention. I was reading something. Could you please repeat it?
I think Bruce made a couple of points, really, about issues on either, I think, globalization or in particular topics relating, you know, noting that with respect to globalization, much of the agenda of the GNSO over the past or rememberable past has seems to have been focused on issues that may be seen to be more primarily associated with the developed world rather than developing world. So Mikey suggests that you may have some comment or issue around globalization. And you also asked about participation, I suppose, in working groups and the extent to which that participation reflected any kind of diversity.
As much as it is embarrassing for me that I didn't pay attention on the most important point, I think, which is on the agenda, because I think we can't separate any of that, what is going on with the IANA contract or with globalization, from the topic of development. And what we need is basically more dialogue and more mechanisms to get things together. And sometimes I've got the feeling that we are talking on the basis that we have different groups and everybody expects the other one to come into adapt to their terms and condition and work of doing things together instead of trying to find simple mechanisms. And there is also the other element of resources and funding. Development always smacks of somebody has to source something or fund something. And I think the development world, and especially through that wonderful tool of the internet, has now the opportunity and is establishing opportunities to basically self-fund and to make itself sustainable. And that only works, and that is a big, and that's a great thing, through a multi-stakeholder process, to bring the different things together. So what you're seeing, there are so many things which overlap and overdoing. And for example, what we are trying to do in NPOC is now to show on very, very small examples like the iEngage initiatives and other things to demonstrate, hey, have a look, this is how it works and how it could work. I'll give you a very quick example. For example, with the new GTLDs, I think it was 16 new GTLDs from Africa, and ICANN was heavily criticized for that. Why only 16? The answer is very simple. Because why should somebody invest money in GTLDs in Africa if they don't have a business model to pay for it and to sustain it? And in the development world, and we demonstrated that there are business models, and that if there is a second, a third, and a fourth round, if we not only tell people, hey, there are new opportunities of GTLDs, also say, hey, this is a way how you can actually sustain and maintain and bid for them, then you have, instead of 16, you have 500, 600. And you don't have to look for new solutions or great committees or costly implementation. These things already exist. And what is needed, and to come back to the what I said at the beginning, what we try to have to do to set up a multi-stakeholder process to do this. I understand, and sorry that I'm talking so much, and I understand this is not core business of ICANN. But it's something ICANN affects and ICANN is affected by. So these mechanisms, what we're trying to do is to set mechanisms where everybody can go freely in and out as they feel comfortable and as they are all right with it. And if somebody wants to know more about it, NPOC, me, and a lot of other people here who are participating in that dialogue for quite a while are happy to talk to you about it and do this. This is something, and to be absolutely honest, this is something we've been waiting for since many, many years. Thank you.
I see at least a couple of people who want to respond, but I want to insert myself here and just raise one point. I agree with virtually everything you said about using tools better in a developing world and so forth. The one area that I'm not certain about is the relationship to the IANA contract and functions, in that from where I sit, there's essentially no coupling, no relationship at all between the IANA function and any of the issues that you raised. The IANA function is reduced to its simplest, is a clerical function of publishing information that is determined by others, I should say, handed over to IANA to publish, and that's the end of that. And the primary issues are making sure that it works reliably and accurately and in a timely fashion, and is divorced from policy issues and sort of big issues. It's supposed to be as unexceptional as possible.
Steve, very quick answer. Yes, you're 100% right, but there is also a level of perception, and there's a lot of symbolism behind it, and where people feel this function is now carried over to the community, I think is a great thing, and that's where the connection for
me. And the reason why I just made that speech is to deal with the perceptions, and so this is the beginning, one of many speeches that we'll have to give, I think, to try to separate out these perceptions and say there's nothing there, even if you want it to be there, but it's...
It is not there, that's understood, but we have to, just what you said, we have to talk to that.
Right. Do you want to jump in? And then there was also...
Hi, this is Maria Farrell speaking. Just responding to Bruce's questions, there were two really there, I think. One was what, if anything, we're doing on participation and broadening the reach. Like everybody else, we're always talking about it. But, you know, that's not action per se. Yesterday we had quite an involved discussion about how do we onboard people practically into working groups. And we had a couple of different views on, you know, do you immerse people, do you train them, do you bring them in gently, helping them to do public comments. So we've got quite a lot of, I would say, you know, using the existing resources, we're really looking at how to improve we're reasonably good, I think, at getting people to come to their first meeting or, you know, to join a constituency. And what we're really looking at, and Mikey has really led on a lot of this, is that's great, but how do we now get them into being in a working group or, you know, being an active member? So we're kind of looking at the nuts and bolts of that. And then the second question that you asked is, you know, I think it's a really fair comment that a lot of the GNSO Council issues are first world problems in a way. You know, I'm not going to talk about that so much as throughout a mad idea I was talking to a couple of people about yesterday, actually, and with my apologies to the registrar constituency, because I haven't mentioned this to them. But I do wonder, is there a piece of work that we could do which is about looking at, you know, the fact that that well-known statistic, there are only 6 registrars in the entire continent of Africa. And is there some piece of work we can do, be it outreach, be it capacity building? There are lots of resellers, but actually ICANN-accredited registrars. I've heard 5 and I've heard 6. So is there something we can do in terms of the legal model, in terms of the contractual requirements, in terms of operational needs, in terms of even pooling resources? You know, is there almost like a registrar light? I know there's reselling, but is there some way we can look at the requirements that we currently have? And I don't know if it's watering down the requirements or if it's just looking at what is specific to that market that we are just not serving right now. You know, we're not providing a product which is the ICANN registrar model that actually speaks to them, because it's just too expensive. You need to have $200,000 in the bank basically to be one. And, you know, if you've got a small CCTLD or local market, you're just not going to do that. So I do wonder, is there something we can do, you know, in terms of looking at, is it research, is it outreach, you know, where can we go with that?
Let me call you right in just a second. Let me repeat something that we went through in the discussion about the JAS process and so forth. The application fee for a TLD, a GTLD, as big as it might look, is a tiny part of what it actually costs to go into operation for a new GTLD. So the overriding question is, what is the business model, as raised before? If there isn't a business model, then it doesn't make sense. And I don't see any way to get around that. And I don't think it matters whether it's community-driven or nonprofit or public interest or what. There still has to be a financial stability. Otherwise, it won't survive, no matter how much it's propped up with initial funds or support and so forth.
Certainly, I accept that, you know, the requirements for running critical infrastructure, and I don't disagree with that at all. But I'm wondering if what we said is the business model. This is a managed market, and we have set up through our contracts and through our operational requirements a very specific model of what a registrar looks like. And I'm talking about the registrar level. Can we look at that in terms of, you know, not every company that we may want to do that is going to be a Northern American or European company? So can we just look at the model again and see, is there another way to go about it?
At least let me start over here.
Thanks, Amr, counselor from the non-commercial stakeholder group. I just wanted to address the question Bruce posed on whether the GNSO Council is having discussions on widening the pool of volunteers in PDP working groups. And well, Maria said quite a bit about that. And I would say that the short answer is yes. Yes, we are having this discussion. We have taken a look at the ATR2 report, the parts pertinent to that. There was also a staff paper presented with some possible actions we could take. This discussion is not only taking place on the council level, but also within stakeholder groups and constituencies. And we're not just looking at how to widen the pool of volunteers in the PDP working groups, which is quite challenging, but also on how to retain those who do volunteer, because we have seen volunteers who come in and then drop out after participating the first time. And one of the initiatives that Mikey is taking up is a sort of a webinar to introduce new volunteers to the PDP process and the working group and how it works, sort of wean new folks into the process and make it easier, make it the transition to it a little easier. But it is still a work in progress, but again, the short answer is yes, we are looking at it, and we do need to find ways to improve. Good. Thanks.
Ray, and then Yo.
Thank you, Steve. Going back to the registrar discussion, there has been actually a lot of discussion and some work done in this area, and it is in the strategy for Africa. And that was a very specific topic of discussion in a session that was held in Ethiopia about a year ago, and it's been discussed since then. It would make sense to me that, for example, if certain members of the registrar constituency or stakeholder group would go to the Africa sessions that are going to be held this week discussing the strategy for Africa, because this is one of their major goals and objectives. And there's been some considerable discussion on that with regards to not only GTLD registrars, but also registrar contracts with regards to the registrars inside CCTLDs. And so that discussion is active. And the thing is that the registrar's constituency, I think, needs to go get involved and get linked into that discussion, because there needs to be more people in that room than the people from Africa having a discussion about Africa. Because if we're going to work together, then we have to sit down together and talk. So I'd be glad to talk to you some more about that plan afterwards.
Yeah, thank you, Yoav Karen, for Council for the Registrars. Actually, Klaus, I couldn't agree more than from what you were saying. There's one thing that you've said that I Dinagri, you said that you're not sure if it's the role of ICANN to do that. I think I'm sure it's the role of ICANN. I think that ICANN must make sure that not only Africa, but other countries that are third world, what we sometimes call the third world countries or underdeveloped, that will have the ability to take part in this game. And as we all know, the businesses around the domain name community are mainly coming from, you know, the richer countries of the world, the Western countries of the world. It's dominated by this part, and we certainly need to find ways to help more businesses develop. I think that's a part of ICANN to help the internet develop in these countries. Now, you've talked about Ray. You've talked about working with the CCT, developing the CCTLDs or something like that in Africa. I can tell you our registrar is specializes actually in registering in Africa. It's extremely undeveloped. It is like really in bad shape. Certainly, I can have some ideas on how we can make things better, but it's not. It requires real activities, real programs, and maybe even, I don't know, just a thought, maybe some money put into it by ICANN to promote these things. This is how you move things in these areas.
Let's start here.
I specifically mentioned Africa because Africa was the point of discussion. I will also point out that there are strategic initiatives for Latin America and the Caribbean, and there's also one right now that deals with the Middle East. And so, you know, and I've been involved with all of those, and I can tell you from my personal experience, when I go to the sessions on Africa, primarily everybody in there is from Africa. When I go for the one that's Latin America and Caribbean, pretty much everybody are my friends from South America. And if I go to the one in the Middle East, it's all the people I know from the Middle East. You know, I think that there needs to be some outreach by this group into there and to participate and to help get these things to happen. And so, you know, ICANN is supposed to be working together as a community. And so if the ideas are there, they need to get into those strategic initiatives, because those strategic initiatives are designed to get things into the strategic plan. And once you get something in the strategic plan, it goes into the operational plan. And once it's in the operational plan, it goes into the budget. You know, so there is a logical path that you could follow, and there are certain things you could do to move things forward in a perhaps a little bit more accelerated manner, if that's possible, but you won't know it until you get involved with these other initiatives that are there. So let's take advantage of it. They're all here this week.
Maybe just one side comment. The fact that there's just a small number of registrars in any given region does not necessarily mean that the region is underserved. I work for a larger reseller registrar. We have in underserved or countries where areas where there are very few registrars, we have a lot of resellers there. We have a lot of business partnerships with local registrars for their CCTLDs, where we buy their CCTLDs from local registrars. So as a reseller registrar, we work indirectly in serving those areas where there are not many registrars. And working through a registrar that has experience, they may graduate at some point to becoming registrars themselves, some by implementing their own technical infrastructure, some by using ours but becoming accredited on their own. So registrars that currently operate on a reseller model serve those countries as well. It does not mean, a small number of registrars does not necessarily mean that there's no one registering domain names. Infrastructure is another problem, but that's not something that ICANN has to deal with.
Let's hear from Latin America here. Olga? All right. Yo?
Just a very small comment. When I was referring, I was not only referring to registrars, it was also for the new GTLDs, the fact that was mentioned that we had only a few new GTLDs applications from that area.
Thank you, Steve. I want to come back to two notions. First of all, I absolutely welcome any effort within GNSO to increase globally from the developing world the population of potential new registrars, etc. But that said, Steve made a very good point that this is not only a monetary issue. The amount of capital that you need to get into this line of business is really not necessarily a bar. And it's also not a question that these amounts of money don't exist in our regions. But from a given perspective, what you really have is ICANN almost has like a type of franchise opportunity. There is an opportunity to get into this line of business called being a registrar. And I believe that there is a communication gap between the existence of that opportunity and the developing world, just to know that this is out there, how do we get in it, et cetera. So I would, this is a huge undertaking. It's more than just what a small working group could do, but I welcome that within GNSO, and I would highly recommend that that be integrated with what ICANN staff is doing in terms of outreach and communication and becoming known to new constituencies globally. So thank you very much for that piece of news.
Good. Mike, and we're over time, so we've got to bring this to a close, but Mike?
Let me be really quick. Rice covered most of what I wanted to say, but as I think the only person at the table who actually lives in Africa, these have to be local solutions. ICANN has done a lot in not trying to impose anything, but rather facilitating for local people to come up with solutions. They're there. I would rather suggest, instead of the GNSO telling us that we need to do stuff, is, as Ray mentioned, go to those sessions, engage with the people. They'll be really keen to know that there are people who are interested, and there's good business to be had. Africa's not a poor continent. It's not a particularly well-served continent, but Africa's not a poor continent. Latin America's not poor. And the opportunities are there. Engage. But it's got to be locally driven. It can't be driven by us. It can't be driven top-down. It's got to be locally driven.
Thank you. As I said, we're past time. But, sir?
Yeah, just a quick one. My name is Jimson Olufuye, the chair of Africa ICT Alliance. If you can see my badge, it says newcomer from the business side, user side. And I want to really use this opportunity to appreciate the outreaches that have been done that made it possible for me to be here. Specifically, appreciating Marilyn and Mike Silber. Mike Silber was there at our event last year, and that gave a lot of our members some kind of weight with regard to participating in ICANN. And that is why I'm here today, my first ICANN meeting. And I think we need to really be fully engaged, be involved in what they are doing locally. The solutions are there, really, but we need to get their buy-in. We need to be fully involved in what they're doing. If they were not there last year, I don't think I'll be here today. Truly, I saw the commitment. They were there fiscally. And right now, there are a number of executives that are behind me that we are just preparing to be more involved. So I can need to be fully committed, not just registrar, but even users, all communities must be empowered effectively to be involved locally in what they are doing locally. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jonathan, I'll leave it to you to bring the session to a close.
Well, thanks very much, Steve. I think we're done. You've given us a lot of time, and we've dug into some of the issues, so appreciate it. Appreciate your time, as always, and it's useful to have the opportunity, and the fact that you've permitted us to raise issues as we see fit is much appreciated as well, rather than to try and shape or you know, curtail the conversation. So thanks to you and your board colleagues for the time and the approach.
Thank you. And as I noted at the beginning, the most useful part of this are the pointed and sometimes pointy and uncomfortable aspects. We We have been listening. We will pay attention to the points that have been raised about things that have not been done or that need to be done better, and we'll take all that to heart and work on it. Thank you.